And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joining me for another Doddcast edition of the show. What we are getting into this week is a look back at two things. First, the 30th anniversary of the SMU death penalty. Dennis is going back. He's looking at some of the things that led to the death penalty, what the death penalty means, and the cases that came the closest to get receiving the death penalty since then. Penn State, Alabama, Baylor, all mentioned in that. Plus, Tommy Tuberville running for governor of Alabama. Dennis Dodd has the latest. Make sure that you're subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast and enjoy a Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Chip Patterson here. We've got Dennis Dodd. It is a Doddcast edition of the show. Dennis, right now, we were going to maybe pick your brain and go cross sports a little bit later. You got a chance to see the Kentucky Wildcats in person. Any thoughts on Big Blue Nation here? Just your quick 10-second thought on the Wildcats before we dig back into football?
Yeah, Tuesday night at Missouri, they did not show up by and large. They were outplayed by Missouri for about 32, 35 minutes, but given all that, you knew they could still win because of pure talent. I guess, you know, looking at them, and they did win 72-62. I don't know if this team's ready to win a national championship. I don't know if this team's ready to win the SEC. I mean, we'll find out Saturday when they play Florida. It's obviously an outstanding team. First impressions, just seeing them play, they're really thin. And that maybe sounds naive and superficial, but I don't see Bam Adebayo posting up in the NBA, nor may he be required to. But that's what he does a lot at North Carolina, and Malik Monk looks like a freshman.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, may set the single-season scoring record of the Cal era. So they've got enough – to me, they've got enough talent in coaching and everything else to be borderline Elite Eight, Final Four, but I don't think this team wins a national championship.
Yeah, I disagree. I just don't see the – I think that Malik Monk is – I really, really like Monk, and I think he's good enough based on the competition. Like, there's no dominant big men right now in college basketball outside of Caleb Swanigan at Purdue, but there's not a lot of dominant big men, and especially among the best teams in the country. You think about Kansas doesn't have a whole lot going on down low. Villanova doesn't have a dominant inside presence. I think with the right draw, but I think you're right. It's a young team. We'll see how it goes.
They're always young at Kentucky. So it's just, I'm trying not to cast aspersions. It is what it is. Obviously everybody in the country, every coach would kill for this talent.
They just look like a skinny AAU team that just won the Jordan Brand Classic. Yeah.
They got a lot of pieces. They look great, you know, but yeah, I wish I would have thought of that. Skinny AAU team. I'll take that.
All right. as we pivot over back into our football land, the place where we are so comfortable, one of the features that you've got running this week, very interesting because it's a good time of the year in the college football calendar to take a look back, to do some history, and to see what we can learn from it. And as we are in the midst of several major NCAA-related investigations, particularly in the SEC, we've still got Ole Miss waiting to see what happens there. North Carolina with its football and basketball and everything stare down with the NCAA still ongoing as well. Dennis, you took a look back at some of the harshest penalties, some of the toughest cases that the NCAA enforcement has looked at since SMU received the death penalty. Now, the death penalty gets thrown out a lot by fans, and this is the 30th anniversary of SMU receiving the death penalty. What, if we could do as just a quick refresher for the listeners, because again, I think it gets thrown around so much, it's almost like fans don't realize how really damning the death penalty was in terms of crippling that program.
Yeah, I was inspired, I guess, watching Pony Excess again. I couldn't take my eyes off it over the weekend. And it's one of the older 30 for 30s. But it flashed across the screen February 27th, 1987, when they handed down those penalties. And I went, oh, wow, it's been 30 years. And every time one of these milestones pops up, you always ask yourself, you know, will they ever hand it out again? What are the implications? And I talked to some people who were involved directly, involved tangentially, to weigh in. And surprisingly, a lot of them said, yeah, I mean, you never say never. It was at the time and remains one of the most brazen scandals, cheating scandals ever in any sport. And when you talk about the governor of Texas being involved and a pay for play, there was actually a book written about it called A Payroll to Meet. And that basically described the whole thing. So if you remember, SMU was on probation at the time. There had been a special convention 2 years earlier to put in the repeat violator clause and thus the death penalty. And SMU still was paying players. And so that's where they got where they got. But in the piece and that's going to run this week, I just kind of look at five programs since then that could have gotten the death penalty and in some cases got really, really close.
One of those programs, and so the death penalty was no football for 1 year, no TV for multiple, even when they came back?
At the time of the death penalty, they were suffering a TV ban. They were on probation. So they already had a TV ban. And it was no football in 87, and I think only home games in 88. And the school really quickly said, nah, we're not going to play. Because that in 88 either. So that was kind of self-imposed and not play at all, which was probably a wise decision because it didn't serve anybody's purpose playing just home games. And then we know what came after that. They've had three winning seasons since bringing back football in 1989. The scandal basically cost SMU a spot at the table in the Power Five, if you want to think about it. I mean, think about this. At the time, in the early 80s and at the time the scandal broke, they were a top five program. Now, you can argue, you know, there's a reason that they were reasons, but after that, they weren't invited to the Big 12. They wandered through three conferences. They were, you know, quote unquote, a finalist for Big 12 expansion last year. The job's no longer a destination job, and they play in a 32,000 seat on campus stadium. So they, that scandal literally cost them being big time football.
Mm. Now, in the cases that have come the closest to the death penalty, before we dive into them, hopefully not creating a spoiler for your piece, do you think that we will see the death penalty as it was assessed to SMU ever again?
I'll give you a cop out because you'll see it in the piece. I talked to a person who used to be on a committee on infractions, which hands out these penalties. Not on the SMU one, but probably as veteran as anybody who's ever been on there. And he said, never say never, but he got really creative. And he said, if you really want to get really, if you're really mad at a program and a bunch of fans and boosters and trustees who have gone off the reservation, you know what you can do? Take away so many scholarships that it makes it hard to watch the football that's left behind. And I thought, man, that is cold-blooded.
It's cruel.
Oh, yeah. He said, hit them hard in scholarships that they have a terribly non-competitive team. That's more retribution and meanness. So I think, you know, I went, wow. So ever, you never say never, because look at what's happened just this decade and what the NCAA has gone and done at places like Penn State and USC. So on the surface, no, but you never know.
Okay, so on that note, let's start to get into these. And USC comes to mind because that is an example where we saw the impact of scholarship reductions. There was a postseason ban, but there was also USC still able to recruit at a high level, still able to get players like a Marquise Lee or a Robert Wood, still able to get players that are NFL caliber on campus and suiting up for USC, but they weren't able to go out and compete for the Pac-12 championship because there would just be these points in the season or points in the game where the bodies just weren't there. And I think that in that way, there was sort of evidence to what you just spoke of in terms of the real ability to hurt a football program. What about reviewing the case brought anything new to light? As, you know, we continue to revisit the USC case with a lot of new knowledge and understanding of the way this process works, and especially after Miami and Penn State and everything else, what about this particular time digging through it stood out to you?
Yeah, part of the legacy of it is that there have been cases where the NCAA realistically considered shutting down programs. Baylor in 2005, you remember the Patrick Dennehy case with the murder and academic fraud and unreported drug positives and Dave Bliss. They in actually came really close because the penalty for Baylor at that point was just conference games, I think, in 2005 and 2006. And I have it on the record that the Committee on Infractions considered shutting down Baylor. So that's really close when you get that close to, just playing a portion of the season. In 2002, Alabama in the famous Albert Means case, on a conference call with reporters, former Colonial Commissioner, if you remember him, I think he retired this year, Tom Hitman Yeager, as we got to call him, famously said on a conference call with reporters, Alabama was absolutely staring down the barrel of a gun in terms of penalties. This is the Albert Means case with Logan Young and the high school coach in Memphis. Alabama at the time, historically, was in the midst of a 14-year period in which they were involved in four major infractions cases. So repeat violator, absolutely. So a two-year bowl ban. 21 scholarships. Alabama, I think, appealed. I think it was dropped. But think if anything beyond that would have happened. They would have never gotten Nick Saban. They wouldn't be on this run now. And I submit the SEC's trajectory would have been altered.
If Alabama gets anything more than what they got, you think that?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about taking games away. Alabama is one of the programs, along with USC and Penn State, that could weather this storm. I mean, Penn State, 4.5 years after unprecedented penalties, was playing in the Rose Bowl. In the first 5 years after the penalties, USC won 44 games, including 10 under Lane Kiffin 1 year. That's almost an average of 9. So obviously Alabama is one of those programs that could have weathered them.
Did you look into Miami at all?
Miami did not, I will say this, did not make the list, and really for one reason. It was a vast conspiracy, if you will, with the Nevin Shapiro and allow him to run free through the program. But the NCAA screwed up. And if you recall, in the end, the penalties were not really penalties. They were a slap on the wrist. You know, the NCAA had screwed up that investigation so bad, using an attorney to ask questions in a bankruptcy hearing, which it had no right doing, that it had to fall on the sword and couldn't really penalize. Another example for Miami was the Pell Grant scandal in 1995, which really brought Miami to its knees. They weren't relevant again for 5 years. But I don't know if that ever rose to the level of really, you know, shutting down the program. That did produce the Miami the Sports Illustrated cover, Why Miami Should Drop Football. You remember that?
Right.
It did produce that. There were $250,000 in fraudulent Pell Grants received over that time, among other things. So, yeah, I think you can make the case, but it's really, really hard to cut anybody doing a top five.
Do you think that with the creative ways that schools are able to work around rules now, that we will see any – I mean, and you make a great point that with the SMU case, the involvement of government officials takes us to sort of a brand new level. But, you know, the idea that there is some sort of promises that could be made, some level of – contributions or impermissible benefits that are provided throughout a player or student athlete's time on campus. Like, these are still things that 30 years later persist, even if it is just among whispers, winks, and nods. You know, what do you think it would take? Like, what in your in, in your sort of wildest imaginations, would it be to require the NCAA to come down hard like that on a program? Because I almost think that in today's atmosphere, I wonder if the idea of providing benefits to student athletes doesn't carry the same damnation or is treated like the same type of sin that it was 3 decades ago.
Well, I'll give you a current example, North Carolina. Now, look, everybody's lawyered up these days. Some of the lawyers they hire are former NCAA investigators, so they know their way around this stuff. But North Carolina is doing itself no favors. You know, the NCAA has now a third notice of allegations. They're considering an 11-year period. Both championship banners in basketball are in danger, I would say. I would say that. And the NCAA has never taken away a men's basketball championship. So, I think they're on record as being a little bit combative with the NCAA. I wrote that story a few weeks ago with Bubba Cunningham. So it would be something like that. And I'm not saying at all that North Carolina is going to get the death penalty, because they're not. But the wrongdoing is over a period of years, much less than SMU, by the way. 18, according to the Weinstein report, and 11, according to the third notice of allegations from the NCAA, and largely considered the biggest case of academic fraud in history. And that cuts to the core of the NCAA mission. So I think it would take something like that.
All right. Before we got on and started recording, you mentioned that you were a little bit surprised at how much traction your story on Tommy Tuberville. Of course, SEC fans will remember him from Auburn. He recently stepped down from his post at Cincinnati. It's just been all over the place, and including as a member of the analyst and college football community. He is now eyeing politics, and this is a story that you were surprised it got so much traction. Do you think that when you were discussing the possibility of Tommy Tuberville for governor, that in your own sort of projection, it made sense to the point where others are going to be able to hop on board and we might actually see this come to fruition?
Oh, it made sense, because as I wrote, we've got, you know, a reality show host in the White House with no experience. And I'm not being political here. I think we all know that. A B-list actor was governor of California, Arnold. A comedian, Al Franken, is a state senator in Minnesota. My favorite example of unqualified politicians,
Ventura.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah.
it was a joke, and he became governor of Minnesota. So why not Tommy Tuberville, who's telegenic, smart, young at 62 for the job, and I think would unite a lot of people in Alabama, because the politics there are as controversial as any other state. Now, to your question, what makes it a story and more interesting is it's Alabama. You know, if a former coach at Colorado or a former coach in California, anything, it wouldn't be as big a story. But think about the elements at work here. It's a Republican state, but that's not if he ran, I don't know if that would be the first thing on people's minds when they went into the voting booth. Not Republican, Democrat, tied or tiger. You know, 58% of all the elected officials right now in Alabama are Republican. But I think we all know that most of the fans are Alabama fans. So, and I got some feedback on Twitter about the current governor, Bentley. I don't pretend to know a lot about that, but there are not a lot of people enamored with him. I think there was a scandal with him where he had an affair with a woman or something like that. So why not? You know, look at the current political landscape. You could do a lot worse than Tommy Tuberville.
Do you think that When you were getting quotes like he'd get a slugger's chance, when you're reaching out to some of the other people, what do you think those in the know about Alabama politics, what was the response that you got from them in terms of what his chances would be to win?
Well, that was Steve French. He's a former political consultant in Alabama. and I want to say state senator from 04 to 11, something like that. And I called him out of the blue. I called him and the chairman of the state party, the GOP, and I had to tell them what was going on. You know, the Terry Lathan, who's the chairman of the GOP in Alabama, are you telling me that Tommy Tuberville is considering? I go, yeah, that's what I'm telling you. You know, it's nothing's for sure. But so and then so then as Steve French heard this, he goes, I may have to put on my consultant hat again. He like wanted Tommy's number. He thought he had a shot just because of all the things I mentioned, telegenic, smart, you know, had a base, could get a message across. So I do think there's something there. You know, it's like obviously there'll be Alabama fans who just say he's an idiot, and you know we're not gonna. But if you look at Tommy Tuberville, and you, I think it's easy really to picture him as yeah, he could be a politician, and he could be a believable politician.
What would that be in 2018?
Yeah, November of 2018, which I'm reminded is about 3 weeks before the Iron Bowl. So I don't know if the state could take those two events in one 1 month.
Oh goodness! No, not a chance.
No.
I think that would be something that presents a unique opportunity for college football to dig its hands into politics in ways that I would feel so dirty about. There would be so many Alabama and Auburn fans that would just love to get a chance to weigh in on whatever happens, because I mean he'd be all over that state at every both Alabama and Auburn games all through the season.
Oh, can you imagine? I mean, just start with the here's the governor out in the field for the coin flip of the Iron Bowl. If Auburn won the flip, that would mean Alabama would lose, and there'd be a state investigation right there. You know, given Alabama football interest, that would be a scandal right there.
Oh man! Now he's what has he been living in Alabama? Like, has he already checked all the boxes for being eligible?
Yeah, he's back in living in Lake Martin, writing actually for 24/7. You know, the site, our sister site. And doing a great job. He loves doing it. He's a columnist. And part of the reason this story came about, I should mention, is there was a one paragraph mention of this on a pay site, on the Auburn pay site on 24/7, which I'd gotten wind of, and you know, it didn't say he was going to do it, but it said he might, you know, entertain. And it was like, so I just called Tommy and I said, what's up? And he confirmed it. And so then I wrote the story. And that's really how it got out. So it was a one paragraph mention. He didn't, and he still doesn't want to make a big deal about it, because I think if he runs and loses, you know, if he doesn't run, one, number two, if he runs and loses, you know, he wants to avoid, you know, that downer. But, you know, I think it is what it is. It would be fun.
Yeah, it would be fun. Have you read? I enjoyed him writing about the assistant coaches carousel, and if you have not read it, be sure to head over to Auburn's 24/7 site. I believe it's Auburn Undercover is the brand name for that one. And he laid it out. You know, I've been among the critics of the second coaching carousel, the fact that assistant coaches will stay on through National Signing Day and then maybe move, and sometimes recruits are burned by this, but you know, he laid it out as a seasoned veteran who's been in the game for long enough. He said, that's just the way it is. It's the way it always has been. It's the way it always will be. Oftentimes, an assistant coach is only there for recruiting, and it has nothing to do with the coaching side of things. And your staff is just simply assembling the right set of recruiters to keep the program going. And it,
you know what? You,
it was a good reality check for me.
You gave me an idea, Chip. What? We should have him on here. Because, look, he's got enough money, and he doesn't need to be doing this. I'm talking about writing. But he's good at it. He's passionate about it. And I think first of all, he'd do it. I think he'd be great on here. I should try to call him and have him on. I didn't mean to surprise you with that.
We can set it up. No, we can set it up. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, so there we go, folks. We might be having Tommy Tuberville on the SEC on CBS podcast.
Instead of talking about him, go straight to the source.
Yeah, let's do it.
Governor.
All right, he is Dennis Dodd. Follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Dennis, thank you so much. Be sure to keep your eyes peeled for the 30th anniversary of the SMU death penalty. Breakdown. Let's see. What are your five cases? There's the Alabama case.
Yeah, I don't want to. I guess I can tease it a little bit. Let's see, Alabama. I won't put them in order. How about that?
Okay.
Just to keep some substance or some semblance of suspense.
Oh yeah, everyone loves rankings. Don't spoil the rankings.
Penn State 2012, Baylor basketball 2005, Oklahoma State football 1989. Hartley Dykes put four schools on probation. Remember that one. Alabama football 2002. We talked about that, and then USC in 2010.
Mm.
Those came the closest to being shut down.
Got it. All right, Dennis, thank you so much. We'll be sure to catch up next week.
All right, thanks, Chip.